you can't be scared to conserve your bankroll, especially if you find a great edge. You need to go all in. I know there's people that this month they made like 20K in a day. So if you're seeing people do that and they have what, like $500 units, like why are you not going all in? Why are you still playing $10 units, especially if you've proven to yourself that you're a profitable bettor? You need to go all in and do everything you can, get as much volume.
Hey, what's up? GP13 here with a very special guest, a good friend, an absolute monster in the betting space. I'd like to welcome Halo to the podcast. What's up, Halo?
What's up? It's good Halo, to be here.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. It's great to have you. I don't know if you saw on Twitter recently, Halo posted a breaking 100K on the year graph. And then said that he was 19. I was like, holy fuck. So that informs my first question, which is like, what do your friends think? You're 19. Like, you just made 100K in a year. What's that like?
Some of my friends know, like my close friends, and we were talking about it yesterday, actually. It's just like kind of crazy. They're like, how did you even do that? So it's kind of crazy because most of my friends are like in college, as well as I am. So to make this kind of money, like at 19, is just pretty mind blowing to all of us.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And do you go out and like buy a car? Like, what are you doing? Just reinvesting it?
Definitely not. I'm not really like, I actually haven't spent a dollar of my profits from gambling. Like, I've just kept putting it back in. Honestly, I don't really buy stuff like that too, so yeah, I'm just looking to keep rolling the money over and over.
That's smart. I mean, like, something that I've tweeted about or talked about is compounding.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my favorite. Like,
it's huge.
Yeah. Because you, on that tweet, you said you started with 100, which,
yeah,
now Drew and Shiesty, they started with 500. That's 5x what you started with. So they didn't do it like you. Yeah. So what, I mean, walk us through like that journey from, I guess, maybe like 100 to 1,000 and then 1,000 to, you know, maybe like 10 and then that 10 to 100 jump. Like, if you could just walk us through that process.
Basically how I got started is on Sleeper. They used to have this promotion where you could get referred, you can refer a friend for $100. So one of my boys is like, hey, deposit 100, I'll get 100 too. We can start playing. There's a promo on here. So we did that. We got 100 each, or 200 for me, 100 for him. And there was this Giannis 0.5 promo. And that's like the first EV bet I've ever made.
Yeah.
So we played that and we actually won. So I won like $80 on that. Basically already almost doubled my bankroll. And at the time I didn't even know that I was going to like be doing this EV stuff. I was just like having fun with my friends, like, just betting on Sleeper. And back then Sleeper used to be fixed payout. So it was actually pretty easy to win on there. Mm-hmm. Once you just like figured out what you were doing. So when it started off,
I didn't know Sleeper used to be fixed payout. I was like late to the game, I guess.
Yeah, it was crazy, dude. Basically I was like just manually looking for odds. I would go on DraftKings and I'd be like, oh, Bam is minus 140 under rebounds. And I'm like, oh, let's play that. And then put it with this promo. And the first month I made like $200 off Sleeper. And then the second month I made another $200, which was in March. I started in February of this year.
Okay.
So basically now I'm at like a $500 bankroll. The next month I have like another $500. And by this time I'm like, I'm on Prize Picks. I'm on Underdog a little bit. So yeah, mostly taking advantage of like Taco Tuesdays and like promotions and stuff. And then I reached out on Twitter. Like I get on Twitter, make an account, and I reached out to Drew, who is DM Props. Yeah,
of course.
So then I joined his Discord server, and then I joined a couple other Discord servers, and I'm like tailing all these guys, like learning how and why they make their plays. And then I had my first $1,000 month was actually the first month that I joined Drew's server for the full time. So then at this point I have like a $2,000 bankroll. And then like fast forward to July, I'm learning about golf and stuff. And I know you're a golf specialist, right?
Of course, of course.
So I'm learning about all this correlation stuff. And like for me, I didn't even know there was correlation in golf. I was like, okay, why does one player doing bad mean the other is going to do bad? Because I thought it was more of an individual game like tennis, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I'm learning about all this stuff and I'm tailing these guys. And then I have my first 10K month, like just out of the blue, which is absolutely insane to me.
What was your unit size when you had that 10K month?
My unit size was like $10, $15 too.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was hitting Prize Picks for like 25X, like every week, Underdog 20X. Yeah. And yeah, it was a lot of golf that month.
Yeah.
There was a couple of really good tournaments.
The wind picked up and the money came down.
Yeah. So, it was honestly like, it was a really like quick compound. Like I was starting off slow and then just out of nowhere, just have a 10K month, like 1K month and then 10K month the next. So it was pretty crazy.
And do you feel when you have that big month and let's say you have that 10K month, right? And then you plug in to Kelly what you're supposed to bet and it spits out this number that's like way higher than you were before. Like, what do you do when you see that? When you see your bet size like go up like that?
Like, because I use Crazy Ninja Mike to devig some of my stuff. So when I change my bankroll on there, I'm like, whoa, I'm supposed to be betting this much on a parlay?
Yeah.
It was really crazy. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm comfortable doing this. Like on Underdog, I changed to $50 units. And I'm like, geez, like I might get wiped out.
Right.
And I actually did get wiped out on Underdog. With my new units because I didn't have enough allocated into that platform.
Right.
So, like it was just like a whole different experience at that point.
And when you're, I think this is actually a good thing to talk about because I hear people like, oh, I have my Prize Picks bankroll or whatever, but you can get wiped out on Underdog. That doesn't mean you lost your, because it's all one bankroll, right?
Yeah. Like,
and I think that's something that maybe if you're a novice, like when it comes to bankroll sizing, I've heard people be like, oh, should I calculate Kelly per platform? It's like,
no,
it's all one and you'll just get wiped out at one like that. And it's fine.
When I got wiped out, honestly, I was like super pissed. Like, honestly, I was like, damn, I might be ass at this. And I had to take out some money from Prize Picks and like Jock Market and stuff, put it into Underdog again, then went on a good streak. When I got wiped out, I think I lost like 27 parlays in a row on Underdog.
Yeah.
And it's like at that time, I couldn't like understand, like maybe I'm just bad at this, but like you'll come to learn that that's just regular. You're going to go on streaks like that.
Yeah. What do you do? You know, what's that internal conversation you're having when you lose 27 in a row and you think like, am I bad at this?
Yeah, dude. It's like, at first I'm thinking like, am I bad? Like maybe I should just like quit while I'm ahead. But you have to like kind of go back at your bets. Like I'm looking at like, wow, this is like minus 150. This was a good bet, but it just lost. I just got to stick to the process and I just got to stick with it and see what happens. Like yesterday, me and somebody in the crew server. We lost a -1,000 bet that we got at -100 odds.
Oh, right. It was like a 12-13 discrepancy or something.
We actually lost like multiple -800 bets yesterday that we got at amazing odds. So it was a terrible day, but like you just have to realize that that's going to happen from time to time. And you just got to keep sticking with it. Just keep trying to get that value.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned the crew, you mentioned Drew. Like, is part of that being able to stick with it a bit better, like losing that -1,000 bet with a couple other people?
Yeah. So then you can. Like, if you, like, you can take the camaraderie that comes with betting with other people, it's just great. Like, when you win, it's hype. And when you lose, you have some people to confide in. I think doing it solo was fun, but like even then I was betting with my friends from school. So it's like you get to share the bad beats and like just every bet you do. So it's fun to do it with a team.
Well, your friends from school, your one friend was the person who got you started on Sleeper, right?
Yeah.
What, did they take this seriously? Like, are they plus EV betting?
Or? A couple of my friends have kind of plus EV, but they don't like really do it full time or like part time. They're like super busy with school and stuff. But a couple of my friends are still profitable, like plus EV betting, just like off DGF and Odds Jam and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think's the difference between like where did your paths diverge? You know,
I would say
why
that
you?
I just like went down the rabbit hole, dude.
Yeah,
like I'm looking into like soccer, tennis, golf, like all this different stuff that's not going to be on an optimizer, like all these YouTube videos and podcasts explaining betting, higher forms of betting, whereas they're just content to like put $10 on a parlay and then you win like 50 and you make like $1,000 like eventually. So it's cool.
So you like fell in love with the process?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like to me, when I know on my Twitter post, somebody commented, "You have 4,000 bets. This isn't part time." I'm like, it's not really like a job to me. It's just something I do for fun.
And what do you, I mean, there's multiple things, but onto that post and that comment, like where will it be a job?
It could be. It's definitely like something I would be considering. Obviously I want to finish school, maybe like see where that takes me, but I know this is like always an option, something that I can continue doing even through school.
Smart. I mean, the thing that like you're in such a good spot, right?
Yeah.
Because you are doing this while you're still in school. You're not spending, you know, your money, you're laying a compound. So by the time you get out, so you're a sophomore now? Is that 19 sophomore? Yeah. So you'll be a millionaire by the time you graduate, and then it doesn't really matter what you do.
Hopefully. I know for you, this is a job. So like, and for others, this is a job. So like, I know that it can be a job and it's very lucrative, but there's a lot of challenges that come with doing it full time that you wouldn't experience just like I am in my first year of doing this.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I was also 19, 18, 19 when I started playing online poker. I was also in college and online poker got shut down basically in the US. Like, I don't know if you knew about like Full Tilt Poker, Poker Stars, but back in the day they got shut down. A lot of like our money got frozen and I wasn't as successful as you, but like I had made enough where it could have been a job. And I could have dropped out of school, but I didn't. And I'm happy I didn't, but I also was kind of like stupid with the money. Whereas you're being very reasonable and smart about it. And that's already setting you up to be way, way ahead. But I do think like, I think I had a tweet where it was like, Billy Walters isn't even a full-time sports bettor. You know, he like owns golf courses and like automobile businesses. You can always do both, right?
Yeah.
But like, so if you don't have to choose, like don't choose, but keep doing it. Like, I think like you showed what you can do with it as a side hustle. Like, why not just keep crushing it?
If
you know,
I think if you want to take it full time, it's definitely like a whole nother level. Like there's a lot of things to consider. There's a lot of moving parts that you're going to have to navigate. While doing it part time, you can just be content with staying at like the same level and taking your money every single month.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I know like you and I have had conversations outside of this one on like, you know, what that more of what that entails, like how you can get more volume down yeah. all of the ways, whatever. And you're right. Like it adds a whole nother headache that, you know, me and Dan Dollar, you know, who you know, my partner, like there's a lot of operational stuff that you deal with that isn't necessarily like the fun stuff of betting, but you know, it's like anything else. It's not bad, but like, I think you're having more fun, you know, yeah. doing it your way, I'm sure. And what are you in school for, by the way?
I'm doing business economics.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. That's wise. Do you give a presentation about like how good of a business it is to do correlated parlays on $100? Hey,
anybody can do them. So why not?
Yeah, I know. That is true. And have you like tried to get your friends more like I'm just thinking about like you've done so well and you're like, hey, like you can at least just like bet quarterbacks and wide receivers, you know, like just do that or something. Sure. Like just do it every week. Like
yeah.
Do you try and drag them in because you're like, this is such a good opportunity?
I mean, some of my friends are like, you think Tua, Tyreek, Waddle are all going over? Dude, you're crazy. And then some of them that are like already using DGF and stuff, they're like, see this stuff on Twitter and they'll pay like $5 on a correlated parlay and they've had some pretty good success. So like, it's just a learning curve. Like when I first started, I'm not going to think like, let's take Waddle, Mahomes, Tyreek, Tua, let's take them all under. Yeah. That's the stupidest thing ever. Somebody's going to go over.
Right.
But now that like, once you learn the math behind it and the why and the how, you kind of realize like this is profitable, even though this may not be the most fun thing. I'm not going to want to watch this game if they go all under, but that's how you're going to make some money.
Yeah. It's like, that's good. Then you don't watch the game. I remember there is a Brett said on Twitter, he was like, if you bet unders, but once you bet them, like go spend time with your girl because yeah. it's just painful to watch.
Nobody likes watching unders, dude.
No one likes watching unders, and that's why they have that extra juice. That's why they just got that extra little juice. What I want to go back to something you said about finding stuff that's not on odds screens. So, do you want to expand on that, like as to why that's valuable? Not on optimizers, not on odds screens.
Sure. Let's see. Everybody's going to be looking at these odd screens. I'm sure that DGF and OddsGM have thousands of users, thousands of active users just scanning their thing every single day. So when Underdog pops up and says, hey, Giannis over 27 points is -150, like that's going to be gone in like a minute or so. And the edge on that is minuscule. Like you're getting maybe 10 cents, no big value, better than a 3-pick parlay on Underdog. So like while there's still value to that and you can get a ton of volume, which will be profitable over time, and I do suggest that, I don't think that that's going to be your biggest edge. You kind of have to go off into like, let's say cricket and just mess around in that category and see what you can find. Maybe somebody like, maybe you can find a correlated parlay on there. And maybe it'll be profitable. Maybe one of the sites will mess up on a tennis match and list both of the players, stuff like that. So you kind of just have to look out. You have to be creative and think outside of the box to find some stuff that you normally wouldn't. And those things are going to have a bigger edge and you're going to be more profitable when they're not optimized.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And couldn't have said it better. Yeah, like anything off screen, off optimizer, off whatever, like you said, the eyeballs are diminished. And at the end of the day, these sports books, like they don't necessarily want to lose money, as we all know now. Yeah. So if you're only a few of you are like hitting it, it's much better than it'll stay up much longer. Now for, it's interesting you say like they, when they list the two tennis players playing each other. And I think that's an important part of sports betting that like is underappreciated, because you could be a good modeler, right? And you could be like, oh, I get 3%, you know, I do like 3% ROI on, you know, Circa MBA. And you're like, amazing, you make a lot of money. But in a situation where, you know, Underdog could post both tennis players and you can obviously like take a fully correlated parlay, you're getting like 100% ROI.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are the spots. Like there's going to be spots that come up where you get these like 100% ROIs. And how do you go about finding these, and how much do you think those make up of your, you know, total betting profit? I'm curious.
As far as total betting profit, I think the edges make up probably more than 50%, like those rare spots.
Yeah.
Just because they're so good and you have to pit more than like a unit or more, most cases more. They don't really pop up too often, I wouldn't say. As far as finding them myself, I can find a few here and there, but some other people have found some as well, like golf on Underdog with those correlated parlays was just printing. I didn't find that. I was tailing people on that. But yeah, like to find those, you just need to be like looking in the trenches. You need to look where nobody else wants to look. And like 12 a.m. before I'm going to bed, I'm just like, the other night I'm up on BetRivers looking at these soccer lines. This is interesting. Let's look at 365. Let's look at Underdog. Is there any value here? Can I correlate any of these? Is somebody off here? How much juice is there? Stuff like that. So you have to consider all these different things. And like, if you truly find an edge, you have to hammer it.
That's right. It's like in that spot where you have the two tennis players playing each other, they listed by accident, you know, whatever. Golf correlation, where you can do five overs on strokes, as we all remember, that was great. Those spots, like, you almost are like, Kelly kind of goes out the window in those spots, and it turns into a situation, right, where it's like, how much can I get down?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, is that how you think about those spots when you talk about hammering it?
I think when I was building my bankroll, it's more of how much can I risk to lose without being pissed the next day and being in a hole and not being able to bet on new stuff.
Exactly.
But today, like, it's like, how much can I get down? Like, on Underdog, I can only pay $50 on a correlated NFL parlay. So if I can go on all these other apps and pit down another like 10K, then sure, like I'll for sure do that. I know you pit 12K on Battery last week.
That's right.
And did well. So it's just a game of once you have the bankroll, how much can I get down when I know I have an edge?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something like, it's so tricky talking about bankroll and bankroll advice, because it's so meaningful. Like I don't want to encourage people to like bet too much. It feels way worse to encourage people to bet too much than too little. But I do think that some spots that exist right now are just like dream spots, like once every 10 year spots. And we've seen them kind of patch up a little bit, but it's worth like, when a book kind of fucks up or doesn't see something that, you know, there's an obvious reason, like two tennis players playing each other, correlated, obvious correlated parlays. Like you got to go hard on those, because the resting state of sports betting is, you know, grinding out these like 3-4% edges. And then occasionally something pops up. So, I mean, you know, you hear Halo here say like, those rare spots, those will account for like 50% of profits. Like that's, I would even say that might be underselling what I've experienced. Like I found rare spots that I've always said could be like 75%. you know, and you just hammer these like these rare spots that you might only get one shot at or once a week at, whatever. Like those are important, but you have to stay in the trenches. Like Halo's, like you're listening to what Halo's saying about when he's going to bed, he's running through all these questions. Bet Rivers, curious, check this, check the juice, check Bet 365. Like these are the things you do so that you stumble upon, right? Like that rare spot.
Yeah.
You almost like accidentally find it, right?
Yeah. You're not looking for like, for something. You're just like, you're looking casually, like considering this and that and like, oh, wow, this might be a thing. And once you realize it's a thing, that's just it.
And then you kind of think, wait, am I crazy? Like, is this, am I wrong? Like,
yeah.
Because then like right before you go to click in, like the huge bet, you're like, wait a minute.
I'm about to risk like 5% of my bankroll on this. Am I dumb?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
There's always that moment right before you click submit. It's just like, let me think about this real quick.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, wait. Yeah, it's so funny because that never really goes away. Like when you find a great spot, it's usually like impossible to quantify like how good it is. So you always kind of feel a little unsure clicking it in.
Yeah.
Like you said, like you didn't, this is good. So you didn't understand golf at the time when you first started tailing people who were playing like the correlated parlays. What gave you the confidence to click those in even without really knowing the game of golf that well?
I think it's the fact that on some platforms they would reduce the payout, or on sports books they would reduce the payout if you put in that same exact parlay, whereas on Prize Picks and Underdog you can get this crazy payout, as well as the fact that these guys that I was tailing were just going crazy with it.
This is so important. It's like that double checking thing, and that's always a good signal. Is like, well, is this nerf other places? Is this not even allowed at other places, right? Like some, you know, you're not going to be able to parlay in traditional sports books. Actually, that's not true. I have the Caesar's Palace golf score parlay from earlier, but like that lasted a week. But like you check, like, is this being allowed? If it's not being allowed, right? Like Halo says, the payout's reduced, but it's not reduced here. That's actually when I was doing the better thing. Better will not allow you to go all unders NFL, right?
Can't do that anymore.
They'll allow you to go all overs on a game.
Yep. Price Picks, they reduce the payout for all unders, but for all overs, you can hammer away.
And Halo, what would you say that means?
I would say that means they think the overs are a little bit worse than the unders.
I would agree with you. And that's exactly the type of thinking. Like when you're thinking about sports betting, you're not thinking necessarily in terms of like, what's the game on the field? You're thinking about like, what's the game at these books? What game are they playing, right?
Yeah. From a casual perspective, you're kind of thinking, can I win 60%? Is Mahomes going over this week? But once you like get into like EV or like just professional amateur sports betting, you're kind of thinking about what's the price here? Is there an inefficiency here? Who's wrong? Is there sharp money coming on this sharp book that's changing the soft book? What's going on? Mm-hmm. Why is this happening? Should I bet this? Why should I bet this? You kind of need to know. For me, the learning process was more like the why and the how, because I'm not just going to do something for no reason. I want to put some logic to it.
So would you say that you, like, let's say you find someone who you think is kind of sharp, you see a couple of their slips, like, are you just deconstructing their process from the second, like, you see their slips to be like, I wonder what they're doing, you know?
Like, if I see a winning slip on Twitter from, say, some guy that's profitable on Picket, like, maybe this will be good. Let's see how he did this. What were the odds? Why did he do that? I know there was a free throws and fouls slips going around when the season started for NBA. And I'm thinking, I don't know how we would quantify this because the books don't post odds for that.
Right.
But they seem somewhat correlated, maybe loosely correlated. Is there something there? And clearly there was something there because it got patched already. But you have to just think about like how and why that parlay was constructed and why it's good or why it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and it really does highlight, like, you're not, how often are you thinking about the actual sport being played? I'm curious. Like,
to be honest, it doesn't really matter. Like, you need context for things, of course. Like, you can't just say the NFL and NBA are similar because they're completely different sports. But if you're looking at things from an odds or price perspective, then it doesn't really matter what sport you're betting on. It could be Chinese table tennis.
Yep. And Prize Picks, like, will probably offer that. They
I'm sure
love
they will.
To offer a ton of stuff. So I guess what kind of, I always like to talk about this. It's like, if you could start over, what would you do differently? Like, let's say you go back to Halo depositing, you know, 100, getting the 100 match or whatever. What would you do differently to like scale to where you are now, but faster? Assuming you don't know everything you know now, but you're okay. Truly starting over.
To start, like, I would just take advantage of promos. Promos are like the biggest thing when you're first starting, and they'll have more of an impact on your bankroll when you start as opposed to now. Like when I was starting, I was, I don't want to admit this, but I was hedging the Prize Picks promos for a free $12.50 hey, just to build my bankroll.
At a certain roll, that's correct.
Yeah.
At a certain roll size.
So yeah, you got to take advantage of the promos. And once you take advantage of the promos, you can, assuming you don't know about like all this correlation stuff and all these advanced strategies, just get on as many platforms as you can. You need to, ideally you'd want to be on books and DFS. Obviously in California, I can't. But there's lots of promos to take advantage of, and there's lots of value to take advantage of. So even if you don't know everything, you're going to get an edge just by looking at odd screens and having different platforms and building your bankroll up with promos.
Yeah, promos. It's funny because like people say winning at sports betting is hard, but you could just deposit, play the promos.
And you doubled your money.
Yeah, you're a winning sports bettor, right?
Yeah.
So why do more people not do that?
It's something that people don't know about, and there's like a misconception that these promos are a scam. Like, yep. I see some people saying that the tacos are a scam, but they hit at 80% of the time. Like, come on, just play those.
That's what I say. Like, close your eyes and play the taco. Like,
exactly. I'm pretty sure Prize Picks is not calling up Jimmy Butler saying, "Hey, Jimmy, we need you to go under tonight. We got $5 from so-and-so on you."
Yeah, that's what they want you to think. That's what,
exactly.
That's what, Halo's obviously an employee is what we've found. Yeah. What do you think, like, has your mindset just about everyday life things changed since you've become a successful bettor?
I don't think that it has that much. I still live the same lifestyle. I'm still doing the same things as I did back in February. There's certain things like certain purchases where I'll feel like, hey, this is, why would I do this? Or like investments that can be made through like, well, I can just make 20% on sports betting per day.
Right.
So why would I invest my money into this? But generally, I wouldn't say that my perspective on everyday life has changed too much.
Yeah, I guess what I was more getting at is like when you train that muscle of like thinking like an advantage player, like a plus EV better, of like thinking an EV, I've found at least personally, like sometimes it's hard to snap out of that mindset a little bit. It starts to like seep into everyday life, like thinking about hourly too much or whatever. But that was just my experience.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like I'm trying to cut down on my time just doing random stuff. It's kind of just like school, go to the gym, betting all day, go to sleep, do it all over again.
Not bad. Yep. You having fun?
Yeah, dude. I think it was fun doing it by myself and with my friends, but meeting some of the people in the space, like yourself, Drew, and some people in the crew, like it's just a blast just going, talking every day, being on FaceTime, doing this podcast. It's a blast.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is interesting because, and Drew's like an extreme example of this too, is work-life balance. Like it, when you say your schedule, it doesn't necessarily seem like you have it, but that's fine, right? Like you're doing healthy stuff. Your mind's active. You're meeting people. Like it's all kind of wrapped up in this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wonder about that because like the best batters are kind of obsessive. And it's such like, now how do you rectify this? It's like, it's so important to like be in your seat, be ready to go because as you know, like anything can move in a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like what, how do you, like you must just be a really big, do your friends like think you're a phone guy? They're like, look at this phone guy over here.
See my screen time. Like I'll lock in for a couple hours at a time, just at my desk on my computer. Then I'll like go make some food, go back to the computer. But I would say I am kind of obsessive about it. Like I'll go to the gym mid-set and I'll be like, oh, there's a new play. Oh, shoot. Yeah. Let me do this real quick. I'll go to the bathroom and I'm there for 10 minutes. Like, oh, shoot, I missed my next set.
Yeah, it turns into like a 4-hour workout.
Yeah. It's like, I got to get this bet in. This is more important. It's free money.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's something that like everybody who I think does this well knows is like also the time, because you're saying like, there's a time when I know to lock in for a couple hours. Like,
yeah,
especially since you're doing this while being a full-time student, like talk to the people who are listening who also want to do this, maybe full-time, but have success, about finding those like power hours, those like 2 to 3 hours that are so important.
Yeah. So right now, like the most important time for me is like 2 to 4:30 Pacific time. That's right before the NBA games start. Usually I'm just locked in on my computer. I have like 12 different sites open. I'm scrolling through odds, different sites, who's in, who's out. Let's say Ingram is out. What does this affect? Let's play it on this site, this site, this site. Try to get as much money down. Then I'm on FaceTime with the guys, like trying to figure out where there's more value. And for that like set amount of time, like I'm not doing anything else. I'm not going to go make food. I'm not going to grab some water. I'm just locked in for 2.5 hours to my computer, to my phone. But there's other times where it's like in the morning, I can be more chill. I can make food and just be on my phone. Oh, there's a play. Let me put this in. Okay, then let me put this on the stove. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there's times like 2 to 4:30 right now. Like you got to lock in. That's when you're going to get all your volume.
Yep. Yep. And especially like if you only have the 2 hours to give, it's even that much more important, right? Like, yeah. Do you like,
everything around your day, then 2 to 4:30, you just lock in, buddy. Like it's time.
Yeah. Honestly, like my wife's going to listen to that and tell me I need to do that, plan my time better. Yeah. Because I'm always like, oh yeah, I got to look at this now. I forgot to update that. Like I need to be better since I do this full time. Like I almost find that I'm a little lackadaisical about time management because I have more of it. But I think that you're on such a tight schedule. It's like really, it's so important that you do this. And a lot of people that are listening, like want to have the success you have, but also work other jobs. And that's like, this is how you do it, right? Like, be on every book, be in front of the computer at the right times, make the bets, don't sweat them, you know, rinse, repeat. Do you sweat your bets? That's the question.
I do sweat my bets sometimes, but yeah. I'm trying to get better, trying to not watch them at all. I want to be able to just put the phone down, go do something else, and then come back in the morning. Oh, I won $1,000. Nice.
Yeah, me too.
But me too, man. I always find myself like checking the scores and like just like, oh shoot, this parlay's cooked. Oh, this one has life. Like, you know,
you're like, oh god, I hope this doesn't go to overtime.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, man, it is tough. And I do like watch. Like, that's the, do you watch before you did this? Did you like watching sports?
Yes, I played and I watched sports like a ton. So
gotcha.
I just kind of have a love for it in general.
Yeah, makes sense. So like, it's also that's where it gets tricky, because like, you also like watching sports, but are you watching it because
you're watching it for the right reasons or not?
Yeah, exactly. Are you watching it for the right reasons? It's like The Bachelor. Are you here for the right reasons? I would like to be better at that too. But what can you do? It's still fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like, have you wondered about transitioning to like what you call a more normal job when you know like you've had a fun, good lifestyle, like you've enjoyed doing this, and then like you're gonna go work for a job that probably wouldn't pay you as much unless you're like going into investment banking? And I don't know what you're looking to do, but like, do you think about that?
Yeah, like I couldn't imagine myself just like working at Chick-fil-A or something. Not only would it be mundane, but like I'm just kind of wasting my time there.
Right.
But yeah, like as far as like a real job, like I think as a stepping stone to get to a better job, I'd be willing to like take something that pays less than what my sports betting provides while also still doing sports betting. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't just see myself like working an office job for $20 an hour for the rest of my life.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, you already basically don't have to, since you did well and you've saved your money. I mean, it's good because it gives you options, right?
Like, yeah,
if you were to go blow your money on like a sports car right now, you would go back to, you know, not really having options. But you know, you have money in the bank. You could even like, do you ever think about entrepreneurship and like using your money to start your own thing?
Yeah.
Outside of betting, I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Like I'm super, real estate is one of the things that I've been looking into. It's one of the things I'm interested in. Starting my own business is obviously something I'd be interested in. But it takes a lot of capital and it takes a lot of, mind power. So I think in doing sports betting, that helps me build up the capital side of it to give me just another option, as in if I wanted to go into that side of things.
Yeah, I've always thought that advantage gambling is like a good stepping stone to anything entrepreneurial, because at the end of the day, like you're running a business, right? Like, do you think about your sports betting, your personal sports betting, kind of as a business?
Well, up to this point, I wouldn't say it was a business. I would just say it was like a hobby that I do for fun. But as I kind of progress into more advanced sides of advantage gambling, I would say it's kind of going to turn into more of a business kind of operation, especially if you want to go to the higher levels like you and Dame.
too nice. Shout out to Dame. Get him on the podcast one day.
Got to get the voice changer first.
Yeah, the voice changer. So going from that, what would you tell somebody who's you like 4 months ago? They've done the promo thing, right? They've built the role to like maybe 5-10,000, and they're using like DGF, they're using Odds Jam, but they can't like take that next leap to where you're making like the real money. Like how do you get somebody from like that 10K range to that 100K range? What's different there?
I think what's different is just having the knowledge and the volume, as well as just knowing people. If you know a lot of people and you are befriending a lot of people, getting their ideas, giving them your ideas, you're going to just through that process stumble upon something good. I know this season we had NFL correlation, which I made probably about 20% of my yearly profits on. And the other thing that I would say is that you have to go all in. You can't be scared to conserve your bankroll, especially if you find a great edge. You need to go all in. I know there's people that this month, they made like 20K in a day. So if you're seeing people do that and they have what, like $500 units, like why are you not going all in? Why are you still playing $10 units? Especially if you've proven to yourself that you're a profitable bettor. You need to go all in and do everything you can, get as much volume, profitable volume.
So do you think it's like at least half a mindset thing?
Yeah, I think half is mindset and the other half is finding extremely profitable bets.
Yeah. And you talked about networking, like sharing edges. And one thing that, you know, I think you and Drew do really well, and you know, Shiesty too, which it's get to know people, right? Like you and I DM'd on Twitter early on, and I was like blown away by your results. I'm like, holy shit, like I remember you posted like you had a 40K month or something, or 50, some huge month. And I said to Dame, I was like, I think this kid Halo like made more money last month. Like this kid's a beast. Like, and you know, getting to know you and Drew, like there's certain edges there. And like, I hope that we've provided like, you know, help to you guys too. And you guys taught me so well, because it's like, we were always scared to give away any information. But if you give a little, like you'll get more, right? Because it's just like the whole is greater, whatever, some of the parts. You're still in college. You're still smart. I mean, yeah. Is that like how would you approach networking then? Like you reached out to Drew on Twitter pretty early on. Like what would you tell somebody who's just started a Twitter account today?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you give a little, you'll get a little. I think you have to like really put your ego aside when you're first starting, or just like at any point, and you have to treat people as equals. If you're giving them something, if you're providing them value, if you're nice to them, they'll return the favor. And if they don't, then that you can't really do anything about it, but just like try to be nice to people, see what's up with them, try to offer them something. If they're doing something interesting, ask them about it. So you just got to keep at it with people, build a relationship.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, where it's like sometimes you'll give something and maybe they'll be a little guarded.
Yeah.
And like, that's okay, right? It's part of the process. Like, that'll happen a few times. And you almost have to be willing to, you know, I think I was afraid sometimes to like give something and get nothing, but like, that'll happen. And that's fine, right? Like you just keep going and you'll meet the people who are like really high value ads, like when you met Drew, right? I'm sure there's other people that you'd messaged or whatever that it might not have turned into anything, but just like betting, like you just really need to hit that 120X, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's some people who like who still have me on red, and like that's okay. Like you're doing your own thing, I'll do my own thing. And there's some people that have just responded and we just built a friendship. So and now we share ideas with each other. Like you and I, you've provided me with a lot of mentorship and just teaching me about a lot. And I know that you enjoy the crew, so it's been a mutual thing. Crew.
No, that's like I said with that better post, I'm like watching all you guys put in that crazy volume, and I'm just like wake up on a Sunday, I'm like, you know, I don't know. Golf's kind of over. Do I really want to do NFL? And it's like, just do it. Just like you said, like sit down for the 2 hours. Scheisse said it well. He was like, on Saturday and Sunday morning, like, there's nothing that's going to stop me from putting in like 2 hours of work then. Like, it's just so valuable for football or whatever. And, you know, ultimately it is that volume game. Like, if you have a good edge, but you bet it only, you know, only a couple of days a week, like, someone with a worse edge who bets it every day is going to make more money than you. And then exactly. who's the best sports bettor, right? Like, it's actually, that's a good question. Like, who, when you think about like what makes a great sports bettor, like, is it how, you know, what do you rate?
Well,
what would you rate them on?
What I first thought when I started betting is whoever has the highest ROI, they're the best. Yeah. But as you kind of get into it, you realize it's more about the total profit that you can get down. Like, if you can find edges, you're great. If you can make models, you're great. But it's, everything's about making money in the game. So whoever can make the most money, whoever can get the most down, whoever can make the most.
I agree with you, man. And have fun. That is one corollary, is like, you're having fun. And I said the same thing. And then someone that I respected on Twitter, I think it was like Sharp Clark, was like, but, you know, also remember, like, it's important to have fun. I was like, yeah, that's true. So it's like, make money, have fun doing it. You're winning. But like, certainly being a good modeler doesn't mean too much if like you're making no money doing it, you know, or you're modeling something that you can only bet $100 on, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're steam chasing MBA for like 10K units and you're making 500K a year and you can't model and you can't even do math, you're still a great sports bettor, you know? Yeah. And there are people like that, which is wild, but it's true.
You might not have the best skills, but you're still getting the same results or better. So who's really caring at that point?
That is true. That is true. And here's the question. What's the next year look like for you? Like, what are some 2024 goals?
2024. I think as far as profit, I would want to hit 250,000.
Let's go.
On the year.
Let's go.
Just knowing all the things that I know now, I think it's definitely possible. The edges won't be there, but there'll be more. But yeah, I just want to keep going at it, getting better as a sports bettor. Eventually, when I turn 21, I want to like get on straight books and just kind of kill it there. Might take a road trip around the country, get some promos and stuff.
There we go.
But yeah, 250K would be the goal. I know it's not going to all come on picket, unfortunately.
Nope.
But at the end of the day, it's just about how much you can bring in.
Yeah. And I think Pickett's great to like, to show, hey, look, these are the accounts I'm linking up and like, I'm making money. Yep. But ultimately, like, someone, all the people at the highest level of sports betting don't really have, like, Spanky doesn't have a Pickett for his 500, you know, accounts that he has or whatever. Like, it's not doable. But I like what Pickett's doing, but yeah, there's, unfortunately, like, it's not scalable to professional betting. But I'm sure we'll take your word for it when you post your 250K profit in March and you try and, you know, go and hit the mill on the year. But yeah, man, are you thinking, like, your post kind of blew up, you know, you're getting some social following. Like, do you ever think about like doing anything outside of purely betting for profit, like doing some type of whatever, like what I'm, not that I make any money off this, but like podcast or Discord or whatever.
Yeah, I'm kind of, the whole reason I got on Twitter in the first place was just kind of to build an account up, meet some new people and just see where it could take me. I think by building a following, you can have so many different avenues to go down. I haven't necessarily decided on doing anything right now, but like for you doing the podcasting. Obviously, you've blown up. When I met you, you had like, I think you had like 70 followers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got in early. You bought the dip.
Yeah. I bought the stock. I think you can do so many great things when you have a following that you just wouldn't be able to if nobody knew who you are and you just were all quiet about it.
I agree. And it's like, it's the opposite of betting, because in betting, you're like, you don't really want the books to look at you too hard. You know, you want to fly under the radar and whatnot, but then it's, you know, to do stuff like this, like for us to meet, both of us had to go on Twitter and like put ourselves out there.
Yeah, and exactly.
I'm happy I did. Like I got way more out of it, but for a while, like I was afraid to do social stuff, but like, you know, it's important. It matters. Like meeting people, there's so many people who win so many different ways sports betting, right? Like you, what you know and what works for you is just like a fraction of all the alpha that's out there on the market, right? Like being created.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can plus EV bet, you can model, you can steam chase, you can get into all different kinds of things and you can be profitable. Like even in these niche sports, like esports, there's people who just like no ball and yeah. They're just good at it.
They crush.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm not going to like say this is the way that I do it is the only way, or the way that you do it is the only way you can make money. There's a ton of ways.
Definitely. Yeah. I know people who price is like secondary to them. They'll consider it, but they are so good. Like they know ball, but like in a way that that is true. Like in a way that they're actually finding edges with lineup substitutions. It's soccer. It seems to happen a lot with like understanding the flow of like coaching and whatnot in soccer. And they'll just like, you know, we have a guy on the server, Alpaca, who his area's got to be like 65% plus on just like random soccer leagues, but he was an ex soccer goalie and he just like watches every game and like understands everything that's going on. And like, he has a massive edge.
Yeah.
And you know, me like doing, you know, watching the market and doing some modeling, like it's so different from his process, but at the end of the day, like both work. And I'm happy I met him because it's made me like push more into that knowing, trying to like go more into golf, understanding the sport even a little deeper where I can hopefully find some other edges. And yeah, just getting out there, right? Like it opens up your brain.
Yeah, there's a ton, like for you, golf is your niche that you bet on. But even then, like you're dabbling into NFL, all these different sports, like you may not be an expert on soccer, but you can still make money at it.
That's right.
So that's why I think that just meeting new people and networking is just so great, because you can find different methods of making money, different sports where you may not be as focused on, where you can still make money on the side as well as doing your main thing.
That's right. Especially if you can figure out a way to like compress the time it takes for you to do it and then squeeze it in, schedule it in, like why not? Well, is there any last some shout outs, anything for you to end the episode, or shout out the crew, shout of course,
to the people in the crew. Those are my boys. And if I had like one last thing for people to think about, it's just, I would think of this as a video game. You've got to keep this separate from your personal life. Just something you do on the side. It's a video game where you've got to collect some coins.
Yep.
Build up your amount so you can buy some stuff.
What about your character traits? Now I'm like, wait, now this is a good analogy.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to think. I mean, when I was a kid, I played like all those sports games. I would play MLB The Show, 2K, Madden.
Yeah.
So I played all those modes and I would be like building up my coins so I can buy these cards and stuff. So I think that I can kind of attribute that to why I'm doing decent at this.
Yeah. And would you say like, when you build up your coins right here, like you can buy whatever, like an odd screen, or you can, do you like, do you see them as ways to invest, like get to that next level too? Like if you want to learn more about modeling or whatever, like do you see like what you're saving up as a war chest to say, or like as, you know, usable to take you to that next level?
Yeah, exactly. Like you've got to spend money to make money. Yeah. And that's true in both those games and in real life. Like for modeling, you've got to spend some money to get some data to build the model. And that's just not going to happen out of the blue. You've got to put some work in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I think that's a great way to end it. Like think of it like a video game. Get those coins. It'll make you less afraid to bet bigger amounts if you're just thinking of it in terms of like rupees and Zelda or whatever. And yeah, like I love it. Well, Halo, thank you for coming on. I know that, you know, I've super impressed with you and I've learned a lot from you, and Dame is obsessed with you, so blow his cover there a little bit. But yeah, we're happy to have gotten to know you, and basically like the world's your oyster in the spot. I can't wait to see what 2024 is like. I think you could go over 250k personally, but you know,
yeah, let's hope keep, so
good to keep it achievable. And we'll have to have you on again in 2024 for the update on how that's going.
I'm so down. And thank you for having me. Obviously, it's great to meet you and Dame as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will end the episode with that. Thank you, Halo. And we will see you all on the next episode.
You can't be scared to conserve your bankroll, especially if you find a great edge. You need to go all in. I know there's people that this month, they made like 20K in a day. Mm-hmm. So if you're seeing people do that and they have what, like $500 units, like, why are you not going all in? Why are you still playing $10 units? Especially if you've proven to yourself that you're a profitable bettor. You need to go all in and do everything you can, get as much volume